Welcome back to Held and Healed. This podcast is a resource filled with resources to help you on your healing journey, especially for women who are rebuilding their lives after abuse and those who want to come alongside her and help her by knowing better and doing better. We're going to jump into a topic today that is very close to my heart, but first, a few housekeeping announcements. You can always go to heatherelizabeth.org and check out what I'm offering currently. And if you go to the online retreat from 2023, it may be also labeled Nervous System Rest, Reset, Regulate, Rest, Regulate, Reset. And that is 6 hours of video content that I put together with Sarah McDougall and Coach Bren of Wilderness to Wild. This is such a missing link for many of us on our healing journey, is nervous system awareness and rest and regulation and resetting. So many of us have pursued extreme things on our healing journey, elimination diets and taking handfuls of supplements every day, stem cell therapy. There's so many things I can't even possibly name all the different treatments that I have personally had. But if my nervous system is still in a state of dysregulation, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, constant, the rest of my body is not going to heal. So I am in a journey, on a journey right now of pursuing what that looks like to help rewire my brain. And so this set of videos is gold. It will help you to at least begin to scratch the surface and understand how the nervous system works, and then begin to get some tools in your tool belt and tons of resources that we give to you. Also, if you are a woman and you are rebuilding your life after abuse and you are on the other side and you're in the place of physical safety, you're welcome to join us on Facebook at Held and Healed, Christian Women Rebuilding After Abuse. Thousands and thousands of articles and resources that have been shared there over the past 3.5, almost 4 years. Wow. Is that true? 2020. Yep. That's when we began. That's incredible. So we're about 3.5 years into that journey. And then also, I just challenge, encourage you, invite you to join us at the honorprojectmovement.org, where you're helping women in practical ways, and we need your support. This is a nonprofit that we launched, and we are working with local survivors as well as resourcing survivors all around the country and beyond. And without the generosity of our donors, we cannot continue that work. So we offer one-on-one resource coaching. We do grocery showers, and we do special events at Valentine's for survivor mamas, at Mother's Day and Christmas for the moms and the kids. We do this huge giving out gifts for mothers to give to kids and kids to give to moms. That's really important. And we also offer some group coaching and group counseling when we have the resources. So would love to have your help. If you're listening to this in real time, or it's before April 17, 2024, set your calendar, set a reminder in your calendar for April the 17th. That is the great community give. And we will have the opportunity to raise funds that day. And every gift of $7 or more can help us reach our goal. $7. Most of us can forego a cup of coffee or a treat that day and give that money to help survivors. So April 17, and watch our Facebook pages and other places for more information. Let me see if I can turn off the volume of my laptop so that we don't hear dings the whole time. That would be annoying. I have notes today, so I have to have my laptop open. All right, is that everything I wanted to share for now, announcement-wise? Okay, today's topic is what I wish others understood about chronic illness. What I wish others understood about chronic illness. And when I'm speaking of chronic illness, I am including any type of illness that is long-term, may or may not have a cure, may or may not have an end in sight. I'm also including mental responses. I hate the term mental disorders or mental disease. I prefer to call it mental responses to life and chronic PTSD, things of that nature, things that people can't see with their eyes. And it's very easy to just be like, get over it. Why can't you just get over it? I can't see anything wrong with you. You look fine. What's wrong with you? You must be lazy. Like all the things. There's a quote that is by someone named J.D. Lynn. I do not know who this person is, but this quote is important. And it says, I don't want to be strong. I don't want to have to keep saying I survived. I don't want to be the person who is admired for making it through hellfire, because I don't want to have to walk through it at all. I want rest and peace. I want a life I can live, not one I have to survive. I'm going to read those last two sentences. I want rest and peace. I want a life I can live, not one I have to survive. And I would personally add, I want rest, peace, and healing. I want a life I can live, not one I have to survive. 8.5 years it has been since I was diagnosed with some weird, unknown, mysterious virus that led me down a path of trying to get help. And 1.5 years later, I found out that I also had Lyme. And in between those two dates, I was diagnosed with chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. It has been a whirlwind. There have been very few people in my life who have stuck around, who were part of my life 8.5 years ago that are still there now. Most of the people that I thought would support me, most of the people that I thought had my back, most of the people that I thought would be in my life for a lifetime are nowhere to be found. So during that same season, in a 3-year span of time, I was stricken with this virus, put on my back, could not function for months. More than going to the restroom and occasionally taking a shower and making myself something simple to eat. I separated. I lost my faith community, lost most of my family of origin support. Divorced, prematurely empty nested, went through the hell of DV by proxy. All of this while my body was falling apart. I have felt forsaken. I have felt alone. Now, have some wonderful people come into my life since then? Yes, absolutely. Especially the last 3 or 4 years, I've met some incredible people. But there were some very, very lonely, lonely times. And if you are, you know, a friend who's been in my life through this time and you've stuck by me and you've checked on me and you've brought me a meal, or you have supported me financially in some regard, or showed up to help me with a task that I couldn't do by myself. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you are someone who chose to walk away because it was just too much, and you want to talk about that, and you want to work through that with me, I'm here. If you truly want to know better and do better, this podcast is a wonderful place to begin. I do not want people to feel condemned. And yet, if you left me by choice and you didn't care about me, then it's okay to deal with that. It's okay to feel some regret. Because many people who walked away from me or people that I supported and I bent over backwards for many years. And so to be abandoned like that hurt like hell. And I'm not going to mince words. I'm not going to say that it was easy, because it wasn't. So abuse and trauma wear you down. And so trauma actually injures the brain. And then the brain is the, you know, the mastermind, literally, of the entire body. So if the brain is traumatized and injured, then all other parts of the body are going to be affected. And so your immune system and your respiratory system and your digestive system and all the endocrine system, all the other systems are going to be affected because the brain is injured, okay? And living in that constant state of fight, flight, freeze, fawn destroys our brains, our nervous system. Maybe you are in a situation where someone is not physically harming you, putting their hands on you, hitting you, but if they're emotionally and verbally and spiritually and other ways harming you, they are physically abusing you because it will wear down your body. So it's really important to understand that all other forms of abuse do translate to physical. Unfortunately, not all other forms of abuse are illegal. So that stinks. But they do have an effect on the body. So it's really important that we understand that. Now, my little disclaimer is this. Most of the people who hear this and listen to this are in a boat that is very similar to the one I'm in. I do not want you to feel guilty for one moment if you cannot help me and you cannot help someone else. If you are in a state of survival, barely keeping your head above the water because of chronic illness, because of CPTSD, because of trauma, ongoing abuse, and the effects of that, this is for you to give to your loved ones so that they can better understand your plight. This is not for you to feel bad, because honestly, every time that I put out an invitation for people to help me, it's always other women who are in a similar boat. And I'm like, because we get it, because we understand, and we want other women to feel seen and loved on and cared for, but we don't really have it in us, the energy, the resources to help. So if that is you, this is not meant to make you feel bad. If you have told me in the past you wanted to help me with something and then your body failed you and you could not do the thing that you committed to, understand that I get that. I totally get that. I've been there myself many times, and I want to do things that I just can't do right now. So that's my disclaimer. This is not meant to put further burden upon people who are in the same boat, rocking back and forth. Our bodies remember. Even though I no longer have daily contact with certain abusers, I had 46 years of abuse and trauma, and I now need to detox from that. So a great place to begin is, do not say to someone, you just need to get over it. Or, oh, but so-and-so isn't a part of your life anymore. You need to stop worrying about so-and-so, or you need to stop thinking about so-and-so, or you need to stop talking about so-and-so. 46 years of accumulated abuse and trauma. Honestly, there's plenty that has come in the last 3 or 4 years as well. But that was daily. I had daily contact at that, you know, for that many years of my life with various abusers. Our bodies remember. Our bodies can't forget. So to tell someone they just need to dot, 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 let's eliminate that from our vocabulary, okay? I may look fine on the outside, but my body is screaming in pain. I am exhausted most days, 24/7, and my memory fails me daily. I have these moments sometimes here on the podcast where I can't even find a word or complete a sentence. And these are all residual effects of abuse and trauma. We call it trauma brain. So just because somebody looks fine on the outside does not mean they feel fine. So saying, well, you look great, in response to someone saying that they don't feel well, is very harmful and minimizing. I want people to know I'm not lazy. I push myself every day to do basic tasks. This is a quote I do not know who to give credit to. I've heard this multiple places, but this is not my original thought, but it's very important. Many people who are ill are not pretending to be sick. They're actually pretending to be well. Let me read that again. Many people who are ill aren't pretending to be sick. They're actually pretending to be well. So this idea that people are making this up and they just want attention, trust me, there are other things we would much rather be known for, remembered for, acknowledged for, and being sick is not on that list. I feel that others resent me for being limited, or they feel that I am weak or making it up. I wish there was a way to prove the pain that I feel. I wish I could prove to people on any given day that this is the level of pain that I'm at, because I have been told that I'm lazy. I have been told that it's all in my head. I have been told to just get a job. Whoa, whoa, whoa. If I could, I would. Prior to being stricken with these basically it was a monster that went inside and woke up. Like, all this stuff was lying dormant. There were other diseases and viruses and things from my childhood and early adulthood that were lying dormant. The CPTSD was there all of my life. I just did not know it. And what this virus did is it just went in and it woke up and set all these things into motion. Prior to that, homeschool, stay-at-home mom of three, kept the house running, made sure that my kids were taken care of. I was what I refer to as a professional, a professional volunteer. Did not get paid for any of the work that I did for 30 plus years in a variety of churches and organizations. But at any given time, including right up to the point that I got sick, I was volunteering for three or four. I think it was actually four different organizations. Keeping up with multiple friends in crisis mode. I am not lazy. But to have someone speak that over me has made me doubt myself many times since. Some of you are familiar with the spoon theory, and if you are not, please go back and refer to my episode where I talk more in depth about that. But it's basically helping people understand that when you have chronic illness, you have a limited amount of spoons every day. And if you use your spoons on one task, you do not have more spoons to give to another task. And so those of us in our survivor community, we evaluate, how many spoons do I currently have? How am I going to choose to use them? But my friend Kristen Jeske has an analogy that resonates with some people even more strongly than the spoon theory. And so she wrote this, and I will link this in the podcast notes. She wrote this article back in, she updated it in August of 2023. So I don't know when the original post, but she says, why my chronic fatigue is like a cell phone battery. So I'm going to read parts of this article and then I will link the article as well. For those of us dealing with chronic pain, this is Kristen talking, or chronic illnesses such as fibromyalgia, autoimmune disorders, or any host of other physical or mental health issues, there is often this one overriding issue that can wreak havoc on our lives and yet be very difficult to explain to the average person: chronic fatigue. Chronic fatigue can often be diagnosed as an accompanying symptom or even its own separate syndrome. Yet so many people struggle with it and find it incredibly difficult to explain to the support people in their lives. Personally, I struggle with chronic pain due to nerve damage related injury. However, since then, I have been diagnosed as having both fibromyalgia and CFS. I am constantly exhausted additionally by both pain and medication, as are many people who face the exhaustion of their illness and the side effects of medication. In 2003, when trying to explain the units of limited energy that someone struggling with chronic pain or illness may have, Christina, don't know how to say her last name, M-I-S-E-R-A-N-D-I-N-O, wrote an essay in which she coined the term the spoon theory. While this theory does adequately explain things, I find that most people look at me like I'm odd when I try to start explaining terms of energy in comparison to spoons. To simplify, I like to compare energy to cell phone batteries. Each day, everyone gets a cell phone battery. People without the aforementioned health challenges get a fully charged, perfectly working battery charged up to 100%. Those of us with chronic pain, illness, etc., are given faulty batteries that are each charged to a lower percentage level. So this is me interjecting. So when you have a battery that's older, starting to wear out, it never even fully charges to 100, okay? So this is a really good analogy. Back to her article. For the sake of this example, you have the healthy, fully charged battery. Your battery also happens to be rechargeable. You can take a quick power nap, exercise, have a healthy snack, and all these things act to charge your battery. Meanwhile, I was given a battery that was only about 60% charged and was thankful for that because 60% charged meant that I was having a better day than usual. My battery is not rechargeable, In fact, all of those things that recharge your battery just drain mine of energy more quickly. Our batteries also do not drain at the same rate. Sorry, the train is coming. Since I am sick and you are healthy, it takes me much more of an effort to do average daily tasks. Therefore, that shower that only used up 2% of your battery used up 10% of mine. You went to work and you had only used 15% of your battery. I went to the doctor and used 40% of mine. I used another 10% getting the kids picked up from school, and then my 60% was already gone. Poof, for the day. My battery is done, and I can't stay awake even if I wanted to try. Wanted to. I try to stay awake, but I am in a zombie-like mode until I finally fall asleep for the night at 5 p.m. Meanwhile, you've worked an entire day, come home and help the kids with their schoolwork, and still have over 50% of your battery left. This often leaves the healthy person wondering if the person that is physically struggling is just being lazy, when in fact, they truly just have nothing left to give. This can foster resentment and anger if there is no way to explain to the healthy individual what is actually occurring in the individual with the overwhelming fatigue. Does the person with the limited battery pick and choose their activities? Absolutely. But unlike my example, where they can calculate their battery usage ahead of time, they have no way of knowing how long their energy is going to last. They just know they have to be a very limited amount of energy, and when it is gone completely. This allows them to prioritize certain things like doctor's appointments, etc., and to save up energy, but does not mean they are being spiteful if they have no energy left to spend at the end of the day. They need to communicate with the people closest to them in their life and find ways to express this and prioritize what is needed. Can they borrow batteries from the other days? Technically, yes, if they had something really huge going on and they absolutely needed to expend a great amount of energy. They could borrow a few days worth of batteries, but this is not without a huge cost. For example, they may want to go visit their family over Christmas and need to try to function at a more normal level during the visit. Regardless, they will still feel more need to rest than the average person. To accomplish this, they may have to take more medication to get through the increased pain this can cause, drink large amounts of caffeine to stay awake for slightly longer periods of time, struggle to get comfortable sleeping in a different bed, socially exhaust themselves and expend large reserves of energy that they simply do not have on a daily basis. Upon their return home, imagine a 2-to-1 battery cost ratio. In other words, for every one extra day of battery energy they borrowed, they need to sleep for 2 extra days. Their body simply needs this recovery time. For those of us that have lived with chronic conditions for years, we have grown used to building this recovery time in around planned activities or even vacations. However, it often causes a lot of anxiety as well, because you are aware that any significant activity you are going to do will cost you more energy than you have, and this can be extremely stressful, especially if those around you don't understand what you're going through. The loss of energy or stamina often causes people this loss of energy or stamina often surprises people the most about chronic pain or illness. As a former college athlete used to working through pain or injuries, there are days when I can push through the pain to accomplish something that is needed. But then, like any angry freight train, the pain plus loss of energy just runs me right over, and there is literally nothing I can do about it. There is no working through it. It literally stops me in my tracks, and I can't continue on until I get adequate rest. This is one of the hardest things about chronic pain and illness to experience and to explain, as there are so many misunderstandings surrounding it. Tips for caregivers, partners, or friends of those with limited energy and chronic fatigue due to chronic pain or illness. Please do not excuse us of being lazy. We have already mentally beat ourselves up enough for not being able to accomplish more. We are doing as much as we can physically do, but we are battling against both our bodies and our waning energy stores. This does not mean that we are any less smart, talented, or accomplished than pre-illness, but we are forever altered and we are struggling to work within our new normal. Hopefully, this article explains why we seem to sleep so often. It's also very difficult to have quality sleep because of our individual pain or illnesses, which makes us even more tired. Pain also makes sleeping at night more difficult, whereas we may be able to sleep better during the day. Therefore, just because we are up late watching Downton Abbey doesn't mean we have energy at all. We probably desperately need to sleep, but our bodies won't let us. It unfortunately holds us hostage that way. We still love you. Sometimes we feel so bad that we don't show it, and we are sorry about that. Please be patient with us, and we will be patient in return. Please remember that we are more than just our illness, and we need to find new ways to recognize our talents and passions in our new normal. She goes on to say, we may say no a lot. Help us plan activities that give us adequate recovery time. And if you want us to prioritize time and energy, just let us know and we'll do our best. So I will link that so that you can go back and read that because it is such a powerful article. And then I want to find my notes here if I can do this. I'm not exactly sure where they went. So she says a lot of the same things that I have included in my notes today, and I'm grateful for her explanation for that analogy. So restricted diets are not fun. Okay, let's talk about this one. We don't do this for attention. We do not want anyone to feel like they have to accommodate us, but we greatly appreciate it when someone does. Okay, again, we are not choosing to have a restricted diet for fun. We're not choosing to have a restricted diet for attention. If we wanted attention, I promise you, there are other things we would rather get attention for. I feel like a freak. A freak when people give me a side eye or an eye roll or they sigh or they act exasperated. Can't you just eat gluten for one meal? Well, yeah, but it could potentially stay in my body for up to 6 months and I could have horrible pain for 6 months. Why would I want to eat gluten and suffer for 6 months? Can't you just do this? Can't you just do that? I just don't understand your diet. Well, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. In 2023, most people should understand what gluten is and what a gluten-free diet entails and learn to read labels. Like, that's just not asking too much. So I don't do this for attention, people. This is not fun. I don't enjoy this. Seriously. Making plans and canceling plans. Kristen referred to that in her article as well. I appreciate other friends who are in the same boat as me because when we make plans, we understand that 75 to 90% of the time, we're probably going to cancel because one or both of us probably will not feel well. But there's an understanding, there is a camaraderie, there is compassion. We get it. A lot of times, if I have to cancel in-person plans, I will be like, hey, can we do a phone call instead? Because then at least we get to connect with each other. And we don't have to completely just cut off communication. So a lot of times I will say, hey, the plan is to meet up for coffee. The plan is to meet up for lunch. But if one or both of us isn't feeling well, we know that we have the freedom to say that. And let's just do a quick phone call and check in with each other. We want to make plans. We want to do all the things. We just simply cannot. Another quote that is not original to me, and I don't know who to give it credit, give credit for it. But if my suffering makes you uncomfortable, imagine living it 24/7. Now, this can go with trauma. This can go with abuse. This can go with chronic illness. So many people squirm and are uncomfortable. And I'm like, can you imagine carrying that burden 24/7, not being able to get a break from it, not being able to scroll past it? If my suffering makes you uncomfortable, just imagine living it 24/7. Minimizing my suffering with spiritual bypassing or offering toxic positivity makes me feel worse. Again, there is a podcast in the archives. You can scroll back where I talk about spiritual bypassing and toxic positivity. Anytime that we are making something a spiritual problem or a spiritual issue when it is clearly a physical ailment, we are spiritually bypassing. Anytime that we tell people to just pray more or just read their Bible more, we are spiritually bypassing. We are doing great harm, and that is a form of spiritual abuse. Anytime we say things like, oh, well, just think of all the things you have to be thankful for. It could be so much worse. Toxic positivity will make someone who is suffering feel small and feel that you do not care about them at all. Minimizing by saying things like, you should just dot, dot, dot. Have you tried dot, dot, dot? This is a guaranteed cure, dot, dot, dot. Maybe there's something that you have tried and it has helped you. If someone with chronic illness asked you, how did you get through this? How did you treat this? It's fine to say, this is what worked for me, but I understand that it may not work for everybody. Okay? So it's okay if they ask. Excuse me. 'Tis allergy season in Virginia. And if you would like to know what I do to help combat that, message me and I will tell you. But if you don't want to know, I'm not going to push that on you. Have you tried, or you should just? Honestly, starting any sentence with you should just, let's just nix it, okay? Spiritual bypassing could look like, just trust God. Oh, this one's hard. You must have sin in your life. Ouch. Okay, if that theory is true, then every single person would be sick. Let's stop doing this. You must have sin in your life. Oof. You need to pray more. You need to read the Bible more. You just have a root of bitterness. You just need to have more faith. Have all of these things been said to me at some point in my journey? 100%. That's why it's really easy to talk about this, because I've lived this. Toxic positivity. At least you don't have dot, dot, dot. Okay, not helpful. Think of how far you've come. Think of all the good things. Don't do that to somebody who's hurting. Enter in with them. Sit with them, hold their hand if they're okay with that. Give them a hug if they're okay with that. Say, I am so sorry that you are suffering. And then do something. Do something tangible to help them. I've recorded multiple podcasts about how to help someone who's hurting. Go back and listen to those things and find practical ways to show up consistently in somebody's life. Their illness is consistent. Their care needs to be consistent as well. I want you to know that I want to show up for you. I want to show up for my kids. I want to show up for my friends. I want to show up for the women that I serve, but most days I just can't. Not physically, anyway. I am grateful that I can do a lot of things online, but even that I'm needing to give myself healthier boundaries with. I know that when I got sick, my kids were 15, 15, and 17, and our world came to a screeching halt, and life as we knew it was no more. And there were months and even years that I couldn't do basic things for my own children. I grieve that loss. I am a mom who is all in. I want to do things big and small for the people that I love. But sometimes I just can't. I grieve for the ways that that may have caused my kids to feel. That maybe they felt that they had to take care of me instead of the other way around. And in conversations I've had, I've said, I don't expect you to take care of me. I just ask you to care about me. And I guess that could be said to everybody. I don't expect you to come in here and make this better. I don't expect you to fix, heal, rescue me. but care about me, check in on me, send me a text and ask how I'm doing. If you're going to the grocery store, just message me and say, hey, can I pick up something for you? I don't expect you to pay for it. I'll pay you back. But sometimes just not having to go to the store is the difference between making it through a day and feeling completely overwhelmed. I want to show up. I want to do all the things I did before. I can't. I just cannot. Doesn't make me weak. Doesn't make me less than. It does not make me lazy. I don't want pity, but curiosity and compassion go a long way. So, curiosity, asking questions, trying to understand, you know, what these illnesses are, what treatments I've had, the diet thing, you know, what are some of your favorite foods, things that you can eat, treats that you can have. That goes a long way with me. I don't want attention, but I do want others to know why I cannot fully enter into a conversation or an activity. Sometimes the headaches and the migraines that I get, or the getting dysregulated and having triggers and memories, they make focusing almost impossible. Now, you throw in some ADHD, which I'm pretty certain I have that, on top of trauma brain, on top of Zika brain, on top of Lyme brain. Sometimes it's hard to know where one thing begins and the other ends. It all kind of just flows together. But when I get these really bad headaches and migraines, it's really hard to focus. And I don't want to say every time I have a headache, but I want to make people aware so that maybe they can be kind towards me. But at the same time, I feel like people think I'm complaining. So it's just, it feels like a no-win situation. Sometimes my facial expressions are because of pain in my body and not a direct response to someone or something. So I've noticed that when I'm out and about, sometimes I'll have a pain shoot through my body, or I'll have a pain in my head and I'll find myself grimacing or scowling. And then I see somebody across the store and I'm like, oh yeah, that person thinks I just glared at them. But it's actually just a horrific pain in my body. Now, if you're someone who I don't want to see, someone who has caused great harm to me, and my eyes actually can see you, which my eyesight's not the greatest, so I don't really recognize people until I'm like right on top of them. That's different. Maybe I was scowling at you. But if you're just someone that, you know, I haven't seen in a while and I'm in a store and I have a weird look on my face, maybe I didn't see you. Maybe I just had pain in my head or in my body. So that's just another, you know, a reminder to not jump to conclusions when someone, when we see a look go across someone's face, it could be pain and not necessarily that they don't like us. Could be. Another thing I need people or want people to understand is I need help with basic tasks. I would much rather give than receive. If you help me out, I'm going to feel both grateful and indebted. I'm going to be so grateful to you that you helped me, and I'm going to immediately feel like I have to do something to repay you. And I don't always have the strength or the resources or the energy to repay someone for the kindness. So know that there's like this inner turmoil, struggle constantly going on inside of me. I need help, but I don't want it. And I'm grateful when you give me help, but then I feel like I have to give back to you. If you are someone who is in the same boat as me, you're going, yes, yes, yes. This is just one thing, one more thing I want people to understand. I don't always have funds to pay someone to help me, but I'll barter if I'm able, and I'll pay it forward somewhere else if I'm not able. So know that if you help me out, you are helping me to have energy or a resource tomorrow to help somebody else. So I may not be able to pay you back directly, but I promise that I will be there for a survivor. I will be there for someone else who needs me. I can't always pay back the person who helps me, but I will do my darndest to make sure I pay it forward somewhere. Chronic illness is lonely. It is isolating. I don't want to be around people, and I don't want to be alone. Try to figure that one out. Abuse and trauma wore me down. I must be careful about who I give access to of my time and my space. But I long for my safe people to be close by. even if we're not talking. I like to know someone is near. I don't expect others to take care of me 24/7, but it is nice to feel that they care about me. A text, a short visit, help with a chore, a meal dropped off, all of these things make me feel seen. I don't want to be by myself, and I also don't have energy to be around people all the time. And I know that a lot of us are on our phones more than we should be, but sometimes just being in the same room with your loved one, even if you're doing different tasks, even if I'm working on my phone or they're doing something on their phone, just having somebody close by makes me feel a little less alone. So, as always, this is not every single thing I want to say or every single thing that survivors want people to know, or those with chronic health issues, but this is a great place to start. Start with curiosity, start with compassion, start with kindness. Stop saying things like you're lazy or you should just, or have you thought about doing this? Yeah, we've thought about doing a lot of things. We maybe even started to do some of those things and then reality kicked in and we just couldn't. I would always like to under-promise, over-deliver. That's just kind of a personal goal mantra that I have. I want to under-promise, over-deliver. I don't want to be sick. I don't want to be tired. But for right now and right here, I am. The other thing, too, is that nobody is coming to save me. And that's a whole other topic for a podcast. There's a term that I've been exposed to that gives a lot of people, it would bristle them, and they would not think it was spiritual, but the term is self-healer. And what I mean by self-healer is I am the only one who is going to 24/7 take care of me. Nobody else can do that for me. Nobody else will do that for me. And when we say Jesus is all we need to be really careful because this is a form of spiritual bypassing. Jesus is all we need for salvation. Yes. But Jesus is not all we need for everything. And Jesus himself came to this earth, put on flesh, lived as a man, and he needed food and water and clothing and shelter and connection. And he created us. We're created in his image. He created us to need those things. So when I wrote a poem years and years ago, 20-some years ago, that said Jesus is enough, I need to go back and just put a little disclaimer in there. Jesus is enough for salvation. Absolutely, 100%. And we need all these other things in life as well. So when I say self-healer, or when you hear the term self-healer, we are not saying that we don't need Jesus. We are not saying that Jesus can't heal us. We know that he can, but he does not always choose to do that. In the meantime, we are the ones who have to be responsible and take care of ourselves. We have to do the hard things. We have to set the boundaries. We have to keep the appointments. We have to find the resources to pay for the appointments. We are not lazy. This is not in our head. We would not choose to feel like this. But here we are. Many, many survivors of abuse and trauma also have chronic health, layers of chronic health issues and CPTSD. So I invite you, friends and supporters of these women, of these people, to just figure out with curiosity and compassion, what is your place? Is it checking in and texting once a week to see how they are? Is it committing to dropping off a meal once a month? Is it committing to vacuuming floors, mopping floors once a month? We can all do something to help someone feel seen. and to help survivors create a village of people, because we really do need a village. We don't want just one person to feel overwhelmed by our needs. So it's really important to compartmentalize and to kind of delegate to different people, different tasks where they have their strengths. Some people love to bake. Some people love to cook. Some people love to clean bathrooms. That's not me. Some people love to fold laundry. So let someone do what they enjoy doing to help make your burden a little bit lighter. So I hope that this has been helpful. And if you have said some of these things that were hurtful or harmful, just go back to the person and say, listen, I realize now that what I said was not helpful, was harmful, and I truly want to know better and do better. So if I say something in the future that makes you feel lazy, that makes you feel small, that makes you feel that I think you're making this up, I want you to tell me that so that I can apologize. Because I know you, and I know who you were before you got sick, and I know who you are now, and you're the same person. You're just living inside of a body that remembers a lot of really hard stuff. And your value and your worth is not wrapped up in what you can do for the world or do for me or accomplish. You are no less of a person, no less significant than you were before you got sick. I believe you. I see you. And I want to make your life a little bit easier today. So hope this helps you to feel seen if you are suffering. And I also hope that this just gives helpers a perspective and some ideas of how to better support those who are suffering with chronic illness and invisible diseases. Blessings, blessings, blessings. I pray that you will feel held even as you are being healed.